You're listening to episode 15 of season 6, and this is the real episode 15. This is the one that I recorded with Lost in Bronx a little while ago now. It's taken me a while to get it edited, but I was lucky enough to get Lost in Bronx, a friend of mine who you will probably know from Hacker Public Radio and Palaver, and probably by now through a serialized Driving with Eddie story. Or set of stories. So it was a great opportunity to sit down with Lost in Bronx, talk about production, audio production on Linux, some of the tips on how to make an audio production, not just technologically speaking, but also kind of organizationally speaking, the different aspects that go into it, and also a little bit about the art and craft that goes into it. So, thanks, Lost in Bronx, for coming onto the show, and let's join the interview. I got really excited when I found out that you were doing some audiobooks, the first of which was called Blue Heaven, and I mean, one of the reasons I got excited was because obviously I know you personally, or not personally, but internet personally. I mean, that it was cool to have a friend coming out with a project. But the other thing is that I really, really am into, you know, independent art that I can get and that I can point back to someone and say, hey, they made this and I'm really enjoying it. So what prompted you to come out with well, now two audiobooks, Blue Heaven and your latest Driving with Eddie? What's the impetus for that?
Well, I come from a theatrical background. I first started doing theater when I was 15, but I've taken vast periods of time off in between, but in total I have probably about 20 years of theater experience in that time. And that's amateur and semi-pro. I mean, I did get paid for some work, not a lot, but, you know, some. I never had any illusions that I was actually going to make a living at it, unlike some of the people I worked with. Some of them really wanted to go out and make it big, and to my knowledge, none of them did, and that's just standard. I mean, that, you know, I mean, broken heart for every light on Broadway and all that. But I was also a writer, and my early teens, 12 and 13 and up, I started writing just solely for my own purposes. You know, it's only been with the advent of the internet that you can self-publish to speak of. I mean, you could do it beforehand, but it was expensive and it was just vanity press stuff. I wallowed in obscurity for a long time, though. I did the slush pile routine. I sent stuff out, stories and things like that. And I also wrote some stage plays, and I had a couple of them produced as what they call staged readings. The way we did that, the actors would act out the play with blocking and props and even costumes, but they would be holding the scripts. And that's just simply allowed the production schedule to be ramped up. You know, I mean, you didn't have to wait for people to learn their lines. You just went out there and did it. Some of it was well received and some of it stunk on ice. And, you know, that's just the way it goes.
Yeah, sure, of course. So what got you back into writing? When did you write Blue Heaven?
Blue Heaven is something I wrote when I was 19 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, the very first version of that was a short story version that's actually, you know, I chopped an awful lot out, but it's pretty much verbatim for what the final story is. I mean, I was a young man when I wrote that. I changed it, you know, a bit here and there, but primarily it's the same story. And it, at first it was a short story, and I sent it out, and it got no bites, and I had a few people read it, and they more or less just scratched their heads over it, not knowing quite what to make of it. And, you know, time passed. I let it sit, and
I presume it was not written as an audio production. So how did it get turned from a short story to something that you were going to record and sort of make into its own piece?
I decided at some point in the 90s, I think it was the 90s, early 90s, to turn it into a stage play.
Oh, nice.
And I did that. I have a staged script that I converted the original story to. And as a matter of fact, I don't have the original story anymore. It's been lost in one of my many moves. But I honestly thought that the stage play was lost, too. But my mother-in-law happened to come across a copy of it in one of the boxes that we left at their house. And she sent it along with a bunch of other stuff. And from there, and I got that about a year or two ago, from there I decided to convert that into an audio show, because that's pretty much where I am these days. You know, I don't do theater anymore. I gave that up a long time ago. And, you know, I don't, you know, I was skinny once, I'm not anymore. And, I could go in for, you know, for a long time talking about what I loved and didn't like about theater. But the basic gist of it is just that I got tired of working my ass off on productions that turned out to be mediocre or less than mediocre sometimes. There's an old saying in theater, one great actor cannot save a bad show, but one bad actor can bring a great show down. And basically, you get tired of dealing with the one bad actor all the time. And it's not just actors, it's technical stuff, or bad script, bad director, whatever. It gets tiring, and I got tired of it, so I gave it up and got a real life, thank you. Yet I never stopped liking to write, so I converted that story into an audio show, basically. Now, technically, it's still a short story when you think about it. It's still a short story. It's still one guy saying his piece. The only difference is I added sound effects and music, and that technically, I guess, makes it a dramatized story. And that was Blue Heaven's genesis and where it ended up.
Yeah, it's very, very cool. It's a great production. I really thought that the sound effects and the music and everything were really, really effective. I thought it was just a really great way to actually add to the story with sound effects. You know, it wasn't just, look, I'm in the future, and then you hear a car whiz by in the air, and so there you go, proof that we're in the future. I mean, it really added something, because you were talking about this light, and then you would hear the sound effect that I didn't really ever think that it was the light that I'm hearing, but it really kind of made me almost visualize in this strange way these different colors of light and things like that. So that was, I thought, a really unique and smart use of audio production, whereas it could have just been a straight retelling of the short story, but it became so much more than that because you went ahead and added all those different sound effects and things like that. So that was really cool. What about your newest stuff, Driving with Eddie? Is that another one that had a life in indie theaters before it became an audio drama?
The latest one is Driving with Eddie, and that's not quite so old. I first wrote that about 2 years ago. I was surprised. I saw the date on it. It was like 2 years ago that I first wrote it. And that, from the start, was written to be actually a short film. It was a screenplay. But as you know, I'm sure, you know, short films, there's no market for those. And I don't know anybody who could make one or would be interested in making something like that anyway. So I wrote it because I had it in my head, but I left it there. But it occurred to me, finally, that I could easily turn that into an audio script with just a few changes here and there for, you know, visual gags had to be more drawn out and more audio-based. But other than that, it was pretty much the same deal. And that got me up to where I am now.
You just have to ask, I mean, both of those actors in the Driving with Eddie are you, right?
Yeah, they are.
That's pretty incredible.
Well, thank you. But I mean, these are characters I created, so of course I'm gonna give them voices I know I can do. You know,
yeah.
You know, if I had to do, like, if I had to imitate somebody famous or something like that, I doubt I could do it. But because these are guys that I created from the start, you know, I was able to do it. I mean, if I was going to cast them, I'm not sure who I'd cast as Eddie, but, you know, I mean, I'm not even sure, maybe a Martin Scorsese or somebody like that with that sort of quick patter would you know, do really good. In fact, if I was going to cast it today, probably even Steve Buscemi would be a good character, you know, because he's just got that whiny nasal sort of voice. And but I didn't really base the character on them, but it, you know, I wanted a certain vocal tone, and they had to be distinct. They had to be very different from each other.
Right.
So, you know, I went with sort of a cartoony voice for Sal, and Eddie is bombastic and more New York than I am, but otherwise he's much closer to me.
I mean, I think what you said about the theater thing, the old saying of the theater, the one bad actor can bring a whole production down. I think that's interesting, because in podcasting or even in self publishing via audio plays, you've got total control. I mean, you, especially in the case of Driving with Eddie, you were both characters. You actually performed two distinct characters, which I thought you did spectacularly well. I figured they must both be you, but sometimes I just couldn't believe that they were. But I wonder what is your setup like? Like how are you recording all these? What's what gear are you using, both hardware and I guess software wise? I'm curious.
I had two different setups for Blue Heaven and Driving with Eddie. Blue Heaven, I had some very practical considerations to take in with regards to how the shows were recorded. And I have an office here at my house that I, you know, it's where I have my computer set up. I'm running Ubuntu 10.4, and I have let me do the software first. I recorded that show in Audacity here in my office, and I used a microphone. It's a kind of a an Asian knockoff mic called a CAD or CAD professional microphone. I'm not sure exactly who they're ripping off on it, but it's halfway decent. It's not bad, and it wasn't very expensive. And that has an XLR plug for it. And you yourself actually gave me some very good advice on how to get that up and running. This was, I don't know if you remember, but this was like about a year and a half ago. I tapped you for that information, and I called you on the phone, and you helped me.
Oh, that's right. I do remember that now that you mention it.
I kept that, you know, squirreled away in my head. I you know, my progress tends to be glacial, but I it gave me exactly what I needed to know, and I was able to go ahead and get a setup that actually worked for me. And then after everyone went to bed at night, I would sit down and record a piece of the show. Unfortunately, I'm running a Zarezan desktop and desktop box, and it's a really nice one. It came with Linux pre-installed, and I've switched operating systems on it several times since, but the problem with it is it's very loud. The fan is extremely loud, and I can probably switch that out at some point and make a big difference, but it's too loud, in fact, for something like an audiobook or a dramatic audio media of some sort. Outside, you know, like, again, podcasts I'm not so concerned about, because audio quality is not,
right,
you know, as important as you know, the content, by and large. But for this, I wanted a quiet room, and this thing is very loud. You know, it's like something from, you know, the early days of computing. I was a little chagrined when I first heard it. But then again, I never told them I was looking for a quiet machine, so I suppose it's all on me. That being said, I couldn't use it. So I had to figure out another way to record. Well, I also have a triple EPC 701 Surf, the 2 gig kind. And that I have loaded with Puppy Linux, the EPC version of it. And I put Audacity on that, and I plugged my microphone into an M Audio Fast Track, the USB one. And from there, it went into the Triple EPC. Now, the problem with the way I have Puppy loaded on this thing is the entire operating system loads into RAM when you put it on. Now, that's great. It runs, I mean, it's lightning fast. It's gorgeous. Except when you're recording, you know, audio and you start filling your RAM up, you know? So the thing would lock up after about 5 minutes.
Wow.
And it was very sad. And I had a thumb drive put in there. So I had to monkey around with that, and I figured out a way to record for no more than about 4 minutes at a time. Then I would stop, transfer, you know, I would export from Audacity right onto the thumb drive as a WAV file, that particular part that I recorded, and then I would clear the RAM cache, okay? And I found a code for that. I don't have it in front of me now, but I found the code to clear the RAM cache so that I can go back and record another 4 minutes. And I recorded the show that way, in pieces like that.
That is phenomenal, because there are some segments in Blue Heaven. I mean, first of all, I should say that Blue Heaven is not a light piece. I mean, it's one of those things where I had listened to it way back when it first came out, and I knew it was good, but it was kind of overwhelming, and I was pretty busy at the time, and I was just like, his acting is fantastic in this, but I never really got the story. And then actually weirdly today, this morning, I was re-listening to it and was getting a lot more of the story this time. But either way, your acting is like so just like out. I mean, it's truly outstanding in that, because there are some really emotional parts, like really, really just kind of like heart-wrenching, like desperate kinds of like parts where you're acting, and it's just I can't believe that you had to do that in 4-minute segments.
Yeah, well, actually, it was in one way it was hard, in another way it was easy. When you work in theater, I don't know how anybody else did it, but for me, it helped when it came to building up emotion for emotional scenes. It helped it was absolutely vital for me to have the rest of the show behind me. That other 45 minutes to an hour that I've already spent on stage to work up to that point.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a method actor. I don't sit there and pull emotion out of my past. You know, I cut my finger when I was a kid and I'm remembering that emotion. I think personally, right. I think that's crap. You know, maybe it works for some people, but I think it's the biggest load of crap. Personally, I believe it's all technical and it's something you can learn. You can learn how to cry on stage. You can learn how to do any of that stuff. And you can train yourself to do it. Blue Heaven I was very, very familiar with, so I didn't need weeks and weeks of preparation. So it was easy enough for me to just start doing it. I did have to work up my voice, because I would record, I would do 6 takes per night of a particular segment. And it took me about 2 weeks to do the whole thing. And I would pick the best segment.
It's about an hour, right?
Yeah, roughly an hour. I mean, I would take breaks between attempts, especially if my voice was giving me problems that night. Or if I was having technical problems, which seemed to happen every night. But I would, roughly an hour. Yeah, hour and a half. No more than that, generally. And some nights it was easy. In fact, some nights I would push it out in a half hour. And that was cool. Other nights it took a lot longer. And the emotional nights, there's one particular segment where the main character is very upset, and that was a very difficult night to get through. Naturally, because I did 6 takes of that,
wow,
that one scene, and then pulled the best one from it. You know, and in some cases I pulled bits and pieces from all the takes to assemble a kind of a Frankenstein 4-minute segment,
yeah,
that then got wedged into the rest of the show. So it was. In other words, it was really convoluted, and it was a lot more complex than I was comfortable with.
As an editor, I sympathize with the amount of media you must have had to wade through at the end of all this.
I had pieces. I mean, I don't even know how many gigs of audio I had as a raw WAV file from that thing. Maybe 4 or 5 gigs of audio total, because I'm running it at as high a bit rate as I can and everything else, and it was an awful lot of audio, and it was pieces all over the place.
Oh yeah, I can imagine. And you know, this is something that I keep telling people who ask me about media, multimedia, stuff like that. I don't care what operating system you're using, I don't care what program you're using, I don't care what kind of fancy techniques the application programmer has come up with. At some point, your bottom line is going to be, how well can you organize this stuff? How well can you take what you've got, make sense of it, and what kind of workflow are you going to apply to it so that you can deal with it all and actually reach that goal of having a completed project at the end?
The concept of a workflow doesn't exist for me yet, and that was my first indicator of how much work was really going to be involved, you know, beyond the scenes. I mean, when you're on theater, once you've done it, you're done. There's nothing else to do. That's just the beginning,
yeah,
here. You know, that's the very start. Once you've got it down on audio, now the real work starts. And I didn't quite get that until I started putting it together, and I had pieces everywhere, and I had pieces of songs, because I'm only using clips here and there, and you know, I had to assemble a lot of the sound effects, at least half the sound effects, but I think more like 2/3 of the sound effects I created myself, and many of them are layered, you know, a door opening and closing might actually be 3 or 4 different sound effects that I then have to assemble.
Wow.
You know, because I'll have the door, you know, unlatching, and I'll have a squeak, and then I'll have, you know, the door closing, and, you know, that sort of thing. And you put all that together, and, you know, so each one of those have to be assembled, and I have had a piece of each of those, and I had folders everywhere, I had pieces of audio. It was a mess. It was just a convoluted mess. I swore that I would never do that again. So then I did driving with Eddie, and bam, it happened all over again. So I obviously still don't have a handle on that part of it. And I thought Eddie was going to be a lot easier when it came to the actual editing and production, the assembly of it. And it actually, in some ways, was harder. Even though it's shorter, it's about half the length, but it's
a lot more diverse. It's a lot more like the sound effects, I think, are a lot more either rich or maybe they're just more familiar. You know, city streets, radio segments, things that you hear in real life. Whereas in the other one, it was a little bit more fantasy-ish. You know, things that you don't, and then they were more emphasis sound effects. They weren't really like backdrop sound effects, I didn't think.
Yeah, because it wasn't. It again, it's not what you would call audio drama. It's not a play done in audio form. Rather, it's a story with sound effects and music. And you're right. It is fantasy. It is, you know, I mean, it's science fiction, but it's a fantastic environment.
Yeah.
And I use, you know, because he's dealing in lot, you know, like the character is an artist, and his chosen art form is light.
Yeah.
He creates signs, colored signs. And because, I mean, how do you portray that in sound? You know,
right.
So I had to come up with, and if I just did a sound effect, like a buzzer or something, it would be stupid. So I gave each sign that he talks about a musical, you know, bit. So I had to find pieces of music that would be appropriate to the different signs that he talks about. Different sculpture. They call them sign sculptures in the play. And I had to find music that would be appropriate. So when he talks about a sign, you're not getting a sound effect per se. You're getting a piece of music. But in fact, I'm using it as a sound effect.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, it was a mess. It was just, it was a horrible mess to try to put together. And I still have to get that part of it together. There are some people out there doing audio drama that are, I mean, they are wizards. They are amazing, doing some amazing work. And anybody who is interested in this sort of thing, I heartily suggest that you do an internet search for audio drama, and you'll find, I mean, it's just the amount, it's a renaissance today. It's amazing the amount of work that's being done out there. And I felt very intimidated when I started this, because some of the people are so good. They're just, I mean, the writing, the acting, and you know, the audio quality is just top notch.
Wow. See, I didn't know about any of that stuff until I heard Blue Heaven, and I think you sent me a site full of other audio drama after I'd heard Blue Heaven. I think it was you. And I mean, to me, Blue Heaven was a revelation, because I'd never heard sound effects be so integral in the story itself. You know, what, like you say, where the art pieces, the lights, are actually represented by different music/sound effects. You know, I'd never heard that before, so I just thought it was just brilliant the way that you used the sound effects, not just for simple atmosphere, but to actually help you tell the story.
Well, thank you. I mean, that's just kind of par for the course in audio drama. You know, I mean, I would love to say that I came up with that idea, but that, I mean, they were doing that, you know, 70 years ago, you know, on radio. I mean, that's just what audio and music is for in an audio format. I'm glad you appreciated it, because it means at least to some degree I was able to capture that, you know, and that I didn't misuse it, you know, too horribly anyway. But again, Driving with Eddie is a different ball of wax in that it's an actual, you know, it's an actual play. It's an actual story. You can't see the guys. And because of that, sound effects and the music is absolutely vital, because it grounds you in their little world, which in this case happens to just be Eddie's car. And without them, it wouldn't make an awful lot of sense. So, in a lot of ways, the music and the sound effects are another character in those types of stories.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, in film class, we were always told that we're making motion pictures for a reason, and that if you're telling the story in dialogue and stuff, then why are you making a motion picture and not just a radio drama? And I always thought it was kind of a joke. But hearing your two productions, it's actually a really good point. Like, there's so many movies out there where the visuals are just incidental, you know, and it's like you're wasting all your time looking at these visuals that you're just like, all they're doing is talking and running around and fighting or, you know, whatever. And it's like, you could have done this all with just sound effects, really, and I wouldn't have had to to sit here with my eyes glued to the screen. I could be doing something else right now. And that's kind of how I felt about your stories, and yet they were so captivating that I found myself not wanting to do anything else while I was listening to them, you know, because I was seeing the images in my head, and I couldn't stop listening, and I wanted to sit back and let my sort of mind's eye, you know, make the images for me. So they were really, they're good productions. I'm highly recommending them to all of my friends.
Oh, thank you. I personally, I've stated this on Hacker Public Radio. I've done a couple of episodes over there on audio drama, and I've stated this, you know, before, and I'll go on stating it. I believe we are in a renaissance for audio drama.
Yeah.
I mean, the medium died in America, maybe some, well, you know, they say that, like, the early 60s was the last of it in the United States, and it limped on in life in Great Britain on the BBC. They have done some absolutely amazing audio productions over the years, and they still do. And they more or less kept the art form alive outside of some independent work here and there that I've heard over the years. Some of it very good. But through the internet, people have found each other who have a love for this, and you know, with recording materials, you know, the equipment and the software being as inexpensive as it is today, it's within reach of absolutely anybody. You know, anyone can do this. If you have a story to tell, it's something that you can approach, something you can reach
for. Yeah, and it's its own art form. It's really become sort of its own thing, I think.
It's its own thing. It's not a cheap version of television. It's not a cheap version of movies. I mean, I didn't do this in the audio medium. I didn't do Blue Heaven because I couldn't do it on stage. I did it because this is where I am today, and I think it's viable. I think this medium is viable. I think the audio drama medium, and it's very, you know, and it's a wide range. I call this dramatic audio media, and that covers everything from audiobooks to a full-blown audio play. And it's a wide, wide area, and it's wide open for anybody who wants to try this. And you can do it at home. It takes nothing more than a microphone and a script.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that the audio dramas that are being produced now and the audio books and all this and the podcasts, I mean, to me, it does seem like a renaissance. And the dramas especially, because, again, I'd never really dipped my toes into that yet. I was listening to podcasts, and in terms of audio productions, that was kind of it for me. And I'm glad that you came out with Blue Heaven, because I don't think I'd have even looked at the drama, the dramatic possibilities of it all, if you hadn't done that. So that was very enlightening.
I, you know, for people interested in good stories and who are looking for content for their media players, either in the car or just, you know, jogging or doing your housework or whatever, if you're looking for stuff, look at audio drama. Look at what's out there right now. There's some great stuff. I know you're a Star Trek fan. You'll find so many different Star Trek audio productions produced by fans, you know? And these are high-quality productions with good acting and great characters. Some of them. Some of them are crap, but that's true of anything.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, at least it didn't cost you nothing, so, yeah.
Hey, Lost in Bronx, we should probably take a coffee break for a minute, so why don't you go get yourself a cup of coffee?
That's cool. It sounds great. Coffee is wonderful.
Yeah, and we'll be right back to finish this up. As I sip my coffee, I kind of find myself wondering how Lost in Bronx's coffee is. I mean, is his coffee as good as mine, or is he not faring so well? We'll have to remember to ask him about it when we get back from the break. Enjoy yours, though. And we're back. How was your cup of coffee there, Lost in Bronx? Did you enjoy it?
My coffee was okay. I gotta tell you, I broke my espresso carafe the other day, and I still haven't replaced it, so I'm stuck with regular coffee and instant, of all things, so you should weep for me.
Yeah, that is a pity. I'm sorry to hear that. What kind of espresso carafe? Did you have one of those stovetop deals, or...?
No, actually, it's my second one. No, it's a glass carafe for an electric Mr. Coffee espresso machine.
I gotcha, yeah.
And, you know, it's so small, nothing else fits there. And
yeah.
I had it all worked out. You know, I had the lines on there for exactly how much water to fill it and everything. And, you know, if I don't have that, I'm lost. And I tried using a measuring cup, and it just wasn't right.
It doesn't, it's not the same. Yeah, that's a pity. Well, I am sorry. Mine's really good, but Oh, well.
Can I say something about coffee real quick?
Yeah.
Real fast.
Yeah,
real fast.
Go for it.
Okay. My introduction into espresso, I have you to thank for making it at home, I should say.
Oh.
You did your HPR episode a million years ago
right.
about producing espresso and cappuccino
yeah.
at home. And I gave that a shot. I went out and I bought a machine and I followed your directions to the T.
Wow.
Didn't work for crap. It was the worst instructions I've ever had. I don't know how many, you know, non-bubbly things, you know, it's always the milk that gives you the problem. And
yeah.
I don't know how many of those things just didn't work out. And I had to drink a lot of those without any foam whatsoever until I got the knack myself. So your instructions were inspiring. And if they hadn't been for your production, I never would have ended up making it at home myself. So I want to thank you for that, as erroneous as your instructions were. So
I think they were dead on, but let's, I guess we'll move along here. So, okay, let's talk a little bit about, well, actually, I want to talk about sci-fi, but first let's talk about this independent media revolution, because I do think that it's significant. The cynic in me says that it's a drop in the ocean, you know, that just there's some really good stuff being produced. The optimist in me says that, you know, we're taking over, that people aren't going to be tuning into mainstream news sites anymore. They're going to be listening to Linux podcasts and audio dramas. Where do you stand between those two extremes?
I guess I'm somewhere in the middle, to be honest. Mainstream media is never going anywhere because it's easy to obtain, you know. But with like a lot of easy things, you know, you know, if you're not going to invest time or money, you get what you pay for. If you're going to turn on the television, you're going to get, you know, reality shows and, you know, celebrity dancing shows and garbage like that. If you're not going to be careful about the movies that you go to see, if you're just going to, you know, go by what everyone else is saying, you're going to end up with, you know, the latest romantic comedy or, you know, whatever other action drivel is showing. In other words, that stuff's not going anywhere because a lot of people like that. A lot of people don't want to work. They don't want to think about it because they're not really looking for anything great. They're looking for something predictable and comfortable. I don't personally think there's anything wrong with that. It's just not my cup of tea. I also think that you can be, you know, very comfortable finding new and original stuff, but that's just my opinion. I believe that, as I said, there's a renaissance of audio drama. I think that's one part of a general sort of groundswell of homegrown entertainment and art production that's available these days, primarily distributed through the internet.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of great stuff out there. I mean, podcasting in and of itself is one of those things. It's a sign of the times. You know, how much time do you spend, you know, listening to podcasts? How many hours of your week, you know? If you step back in time 15 years or so, you would be spending those hours doing something else, and very likely a good portion of them would be spent in front of the tube.
Right.
You know? That's just how things were, because this medium, you know, these media didn't exist. And now, homegrown stuff, people producing their own stuff, their own artwork, their own games, their own, you know, audio productions, their own movies, you know, all of this stuff is happening at an incredible rate. But it's not going to replace Hollywood, you know. Hollywood, in the end, you know, everyone says it's struggling to survive. Well, it will survive, because in the end, it's made up of people who want to make money. And they'll figure out a way to do that. They'll figure out a way to survive, because that's what they do. I personally believe that the homegrown stuff is going to take the lead when it comes to creativity, because we can afford to. For what Blue Heaven cost me, it doesn't matter if it's a terrible flop. I mean, honestly, I think maybe 100 people have heard it at all at this point. You know, there's been something like 50 downloads off of the Internet Archive, which I also have it, and I have absolutely no idea how many have been off of my own site. So, you know, because I don't keep track of any of that. And I, you know, it's been mirrored at least once that I know of, and there may be others that I don't know of, but, you know, there can't be very many people who've heard it. So it's not what you'd call a commercial success. And I can afford that because it didn't cost me anything. You know, it cost me my time, but it's my time to spend because I'm looking for something to do with my time. It's what I'm doing with my free hours, as opposed to sitting in front of a television. I can afford to take those artistic chances because if it stinks, who cares? You know, if it's awesome, who cares? You know, I'm not making a dime off of it, so I can take a big risk if I want to. If you got millions of dollars invested in something, you can't afford to take those kinds of risks, so you tend to stick with what you know is going to bring in a certain percentage of profits, a certain amount of money that you can more or less, you know, bank on. At least that's the goal that they have. I understand the mindset. I think it's short-sighted, and I think in the end it costs more money than it saves, but I can understand where they're coming from, you know, traditional media. I think people want better. I know I always did. I think people, in a way, deserve better. But people seem, you know, I mean, let's step back a bit. Do you remember that old television show, Roseanne, starring Roseanne Barr? The show was on forever. It was number one or in the top 10 for years. And yet, in my entire life, I have never once met anybody who admitted to watching that show. Okay? And there's a lot of them out there like that. Somebody is watching these shows. Somebody's watching them and watches them every week. You know, this isn't going anywhere. People like that sort of stuff. Many people do. You know, I don't, but that's me. I'm the first to admit that Blue Heaven is not going to be for everybody. Azimuth over on Colonel Panic, he hated it. You know, and I don't know if I'll ever produce anything else like it, but I did that one time. Some people are going to like it and some are not, and that's fine. You know, who the hell am I to tell them what they like and don't like? So popular media isn't going anywhere, but I do believe that the creative edge is going to be in the homegrown stuff. It's going to be in the free and open source commons that I personally favor. I think that's where people can truly innovate and truly experiment. And I believe that Hollywood and its ilk will be copying from that. They'll be watching it closely, and they'll take their lead from that. And they'll be comfortable doing that after a time because, you know, we can take the risks, and they can make the money.
Well, speaking of the commons and stuff like that, I was looking through your sample list, or the credits, I guess, of both the productions, and I just... Even though I've done, I mean, Fat Chance Lester albums, and I use a lot of samples and sound effects and stuff from other people, it just struck me that the credit list was just so long, and it just had everything about licenses. But the cool part of it was that it was all permitted. You know, it was all Creative Commons. But yeah, it just seems like you have to be a lawyer to be able to get through all of these different samples and give them all credit. It just seems like you have to put a completely different hat on and, like, really be sort of on your legal mindset. How did you keep track of all that stuff?
Oh my god, it was such an unbelievable pain in the ass.
Yeah.
It was my least favorite part of doing both productions, getting all of that straight.
Yeah.
In fact, I finished Eddie fully a month ago, fully more than a month ago, and it took me fully 2 weeks just to get the credits straight on that. And that was assembling it all the way along, just trying to get it all straight. And I'd take days off, and I would wander around doing everything I could to avoid sitting in the chair because I couldn't stand to sit down and do it. It was awful. It's absolutely horrible. Part of it is because of the way I chose to attribute. You know, I have a certain format that I follow, and that required for every single piece that I use to go back and find the name of the artist, find a page of some sort that, you know, links back to them, to find the name of the actual file that I used, because, you know, there can be multiple versions of a particular piece, you know.
Yeah.
So I put the actual name of the file I used, and then a link to that somewhere on the net, or a link to a page where you can get it anyway. And then I stated what the license was associated with that piece, and then a link to the license, the actual statement of the license. So every single piece had four lines to it in text, and I was able to cut that in half with some markup on the Gopher site that I put everything up. I put everything on a Gopher site, as you know, most people who know my work know that's what I do.
Right.
And that's kind of a whole separate conversation. But it, you know, I was able to cut that down a little bit in, you know, by using a Gopher map to get it all straight. But it was a lot of work. It's very unpleasant. I wish there was some sort of one-stop database for this sort of stuff. If someone wanted to put that together, it would make everybody's life so much easier. But the fact
so
that you have
easier.
To troll all over the internet for this crap, and sometimes you can't be sure. Sometimes you're not, it's not clear what it is you're using. And if I couldn't be very sure of the license associated with a piece, I couldn't use it. And I made a mistake. In Eddie, I made a mistake. There were like about 5 or 6 tracks. After I mixed everything down, I had the entire thing done. I went back and found that they were the wrong license.
They had a
non-commercial aspect to it, and I don't want to do that because that limits how it can be redistributed later.
Yeah.
So I had to go back and rip those out and replace them with other pieces. It delayed things for almost a week. I just hated it. It was awful. It was awful. After Blue Heaven, I swore I would never have a lot of music or anything like that. You know, a lot of things. You swear a lot of things, and then it all goes out the window because Eddie's got probably twice as much in it. So, it's not pleasant. I don't think that anyone's going to enjoy that part of it.
Well, let me tell you one thing, though, about that. I mean, the Creative Commons licensing thing, I don't honestly know when that came around, like, into existence. I know that I discovered it, you know, pretty much when I discovered Linux, but that has made it a lot easier because, I mean, when I was doing the multimedia sprint and going through the font licenses, I was just finding all kinds of just homegrown, like, sort of conditions. You can use it for this, but if you use it for that, then email me and let me know. Here's my email address. You know, like, they really expect you to email. You know, just bizarre things, and you're just like, it's just so confusing, and it just gets so irritating. But at least with the Creative Commons stuff, like, most of the stuff that you find on the popular sharing sites like Freesound, Jamendo, you know, all these places, most of them pretty much adhere to Creative Commons, and they just kind of spell it out. Here's exactly what you can do. It's still a pain in the neck, but that really does simplify it, as long as everyone's playing by the same, sort of the same baseline.
Yeah, I agree. Because if I had to go, you know, like, email everybody to use their particular, I would never happen. I would never use it. And that's it. For anybody who is thinking about putting a piece of theirs, either a piece of music or a sound effect or something like that out on the internet for other people to use, Creative Commons, Creative Commons, Creative Commons. I can't say it enough. And in my opinion, Creative Commons attribution share alike or Creative Commons sampling or something like that that's very, very free is the way to go. Because if it's more complex or if it's more restrictive, no one will use it.
Yeah.
If you put it out there for people to use, then you want to make, you know, you want to make it easy for them to use it.
Yeah.
Anybody who puts a non-commercial on their piece, if they don't really have a reason to do that, if they're only doing it because they don't want somebody making, you know, taking their work and making money off of it without giving either them some money or giving, you know, or locking it up in some, I think those fears are erroneous. I understand it because it's not clear. It's not very clear what that really means, but I think you need it, you want it to be used, and if it's used, then your work is going to get better known. Now, I don't know of anyone ever taking or remixing any of my work. If they do, I'm going to get a little credit for that, and my work will go on in their work. If I had a restrictive license, that wouldn't be possible. Or worse yet, they go ahead and do it, and then I'm stuck once I find out. Do I pursue it legally? Do I send them a cease and desist or something ridiculous? You know, I didn't do this to have fights like that. You know,
right.
I mean, it's ridiculous that you would have to. So make it free, give the damn thing away, or keep it to yourself.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
I completely agree. I have a feeling a lot of my listeners are going to agree with you, so thanks for being on the show, Lost in Bronx. I guess you should probably give the place where people can go find the audio dramas that we're talking about.
Well, yeah, they can find it on my site. That will be at info-underground.net/LNB. That's my gopher site that Deep Geek set up for us. It's where I hang my hat. It's a PyGopherD server, which means there's an HTTP version of every page. That is to say, there's stuff on the web, so you don't need a gopher client to access my stuff. So, info-underground.net/LNB.
Cool. Thanks for coming on the show, Austin Bronx, and I'll see you around.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I think that's probably the end of the show. Wanted to mention really quick, since it's only a couple of months away now, Ohio Linux Fest. It is in September, so you should go to ohiolinux.org, check out the site, register, and try to get yourself over to Ohio Linux Festival. I hope to see you there. I will certainly be there. This has been episode 15 of season 6 of the GNU World Order. I'm Klaatu, and you can reach me at notklaatu@hackerpublicradio.org, and you can find me on IRC in the channel Ogcast Planet or Slacker Media or Slackware. My nick is notklaatu. Thanks for listening, and talk to you next time.
by for an important announcement.